Chapter 24. A Show of Forza. Scooping Janet into my arms, I run at full pelt for Harmony Hall, barely keeping ahead of the wave of ice. Behind me, the entire drum circle club is frozen up to their waists. "Get help!" they yell. "Hurry!" Trees and bushes are swallowed by the icy wave, crackling as they freeze into spidery shapes bent from the weight. Curlicues of frost wind up the walls of the cafeteria. The ice is flowing in from all directions, and I see students running ahead of me, only to be overtaken. They freeze in mid-step, trapped in pillars of ice. Colin Brunnings trips, lands on his knees, and is quickly frozen up to his neck. One hand outstretched, his scream pitched to an impressive E-sharp. "Mrs. LaRue," I shout. "Mr. Pinwhistle!" A wave of ice rushes toward me from my left. With a yelp, I alter my course, now hemmed in on two sides. Janet bounces against my chest, whimpering. I run past the shell just as the sparring team is letting out. Kirsten leads the group while Jai and Darby bring up the rear. "Run!" I yell. In response, I get a lot of stares and not nearly enough terrified sprinting. "I said run!" I point behind me. Kirsten sees it first. She gasps and pushes the others back inside. "No," I wave wildly at them. "You have to run." Only Jai and Darby listen, sprinting after me. I glance back to see the ice rush into the shell and over the lobby floor. The windows go white with frost, and ice crawls up the outer walls of the building, swallowing it whole. Glittering icicles spring from the eaves, their dangerous points flashing in the sunlight. Screams rise from inside the concert hall, where I have a feeling that the spar team has been trapped. "What happened?" Jai gasps. "I don't know. Just get to Mrs. LaRue's office." Together, we run uphill toward Harmony Hall. Jai shrieks as the ice freezes the heel of his shoe. He yanks it loose before it can swallow the rest of his foot. "We can't outrun it," Darby says. "Then what do we do?" "There's no outclimbing it. We already saw it engulf entire trees." The concert hall is locked in ice all the way to its high armadillo shell roof, so it resembles a small iceberg. I spot Trevor Thompson halfway up a lamppost, his hands and legs frozen solid against the metal. Darby, who's taken the lead, suddenly slows. "What are you doing?" I ask. She turns around, looks at the ice through narrow eyes, then says, "Trying something." I shout as she runs past me, takes a wild leap, and lands atop the ice, skating on her shoes. Her arms pinwheel until she finds her balance. "Come on," she shouts, grinning at us. "It's safe on top. Just don't let the edges touch you." "Why do these things always happen to us?" groans Jai. "Here goes." He turns and runs at the ice, jumping high over the edge and landing in a heap. But he seems safe, spinning away in a tangle of arms and legs. "Amelia," Darby shouts, "stop running." I tuck Janet under my arm like a football. Poor thing, she looks seasick. But Miss Mott trusted her to me, and I'm not going to let her become a furry popsicle. I run straight toward the ice's rippling edge, leap, and land on both feet. Shrieking, I hold Janet tight as I slip and slide toward Darby. We crash into each other and land hard, Darby on top of me, Janet yipping wildly. We skid into the plinth of Beethoven's statue. The old composer has disappeared beneath several inches of ice, his bright pink hat barely visible. "Careful," Darby says, hobbling to her feet. "Have you ever ice skated?" "No, and I don't need your help," I say, pushing her hand away. I make it to my feet, only to slip and fall hard on my butt. Janet yelps, and I barely keep my arms around her. "What's your deal?" Darby asks. "Let me help you." "I know what you did, Darby." "What? What did I do?" I shake my head. This isn't the time to get into it. "This is awesome!" yells Jai, who goes gliding past on his shoes. He turns and skates backward, then pirouettes. "Jai!" I point to Harmony Hall. "Skate up there and get the headmaestro." "Too late," he says. The ice has reached the building and is quickly climbing the walls, sealing the windows and doors. Victoria is trapped on the front ramp, her wheelchair encrusted with ice. And behind her, Mr. Pinwhistle is frozen in mid-step, his face purple with anger.
"Who did this?" he roars, as ice climbs up to his waist.
He struggles to open his trumpet case. The ice swallows it before he can, freezing his hand to the latch. Jamal and Amari, who must have also figured out how to avoid getting iced over, skate up to Jai, their eyes wide.
"What's happening?"
Amari asks, her voice shrill with alarm as she wobbles along.
"And how do we stop it?"
"No idea," Jai answers. "But whatever it is, I think it already won."
I look around and see every inch of Mistwick encased in ice. Every surface gleams and shines, and it would look beautiful if it weren't totally terrifying. It doesn't even look like our school. It looks like some icy alien planet. Only the mountains in the far distance are untouched. And all over campus, kids, staff, and maestros are frozen in place, squirming and shouting. What now?
"Does anyone have an instrument they can use?" Mr. Pinwhistle yells.
I left my flute back by the drum circle. Jai dropped his violin case. Now it's frozen over on the ground. Jamal and Amari don't have their instruments either.
"I do,"
Darby shouts. Cheers rise all around.
"Darby, very good," Mr. Pinwhistle says. "Very carefully take it out and assemble it."
She takes out her oboe, but just when she finishes assembling it, she slips and falls, and the oboe goes spinning away across the ice. Panicking, Darby goes sliding after it, but ends up crashing into a frozen bush, while her oboe rolls off toward the shell with a clatter. I groan into Janet's fur. Mr. Pinwhistle rubs his free hand over his face.
"Everyone just chill," Jai says.
Then he giggles.
"Chill. Get it?"
"Shut up, Jai,"
snaps Jingfei, who's frozen against the door into the girls' dorm.
"Amari and I can try to reach the headmaestro,"
Jamal says, and the twins skate off toward Harmony Hall. But Harmony Hall is uphill, and no amount of skill will propel them up the frozen slope. They end up in a pile back where they started, yelling at each other.
"There!"
Darby shouts, pointing toward the girls' dorm.
"Rosa!"
Rosa Guerrera stands in an open window, ice up to her waist, holding her electric guitar. She looks rattled, but when she sees us all looking, she scowls.
"Whoever did this will face my wrath when this is over," she warns. "Just play that thing and get us out of here,"
Jingfei calls back.
"If I could do that, do you think I'd be standing here talking to you?"
She nods at the other hand, which is frozen to the windowsill.
"I'm a bit short-handed at the moment."
"I can do it,"
Jai says softly. I'm the only one who hears him.
"What?"
He lifts his head, his eyes wide.
"I said, I can do it!"
He shouts at Rosa.
"Throw me the guitar!"
"There is absolutely no way!"
"Let him play it!"
Amari shouts. More voices join in.
"Let him play!
Just get us out of this!"
"Give him the instrument, Miss Guerrera!"
bellows Mr. Pinwhistle. Growling under her breath, Rosa lowers the guitar by the cord. Jai takes it reverently.
"Hey, gentle!"
Rosa slams an amp onto the windowsill.
"Put a scratch on her and I'll destroy you and every person you love, Kapoor. Do you even know how to play it?"
"Yeah. What should I play?"
he asks, still staring at the guitar in wonder. Rosa rolls her eyes.
"Some kind of heat spell," Darby shouts. "That should do the trick, if Rosa cranks that thing up."
Jai nods, thoughtful, probably transposing notes in his head.
"I can do that."
Rosa twists the knob on her amp to maximum, and all of us within earshot hold our breath. Jai holds the guitar for a long moment. I've never seen him concentrate so hard. His fingers move slowly over the frets, his lips moving slightly as he talks to himself. Then, tentatively, he strums the first four notes, which echo across the campus. Jai pauses, takes a deep breath, then plays on. His long brown fingers curl over the neck of the guitar, picking out the chords, unsure at first. But then the tempo gets faster and faster as he finds the melody. He begins swaying with the instrument, his fingers blurring over the strings.
"Oh, dang," says Amari, still spread-eagled on the ice. "Jai can shred!"
And shred, Jai does.
He converts the music into electric fire. Notes sizzle from the strings, blasted out by Rosa's amp all across Mistwick. Blue elemental magic smokes from the guitar, swirling and popping. And gradually, the ice around Jai begins to melt. Heat spreads in a shimmering blanket. From the eaves and walls, the branches and statues, water begins to drip, then trickle, then pour. The blast of sound from the guitar washes over me like a summer day. Rosa is the first to be freed. She vanishes into her room, then appears with another amp. Plugging it in, she doubles the strength of Jai's sound. He plays on, curled over the guitar, as if no one else were around. And all across Mistwick, ice melts away. Trees straighten, students scramble free, and doors open. Within minutes, the ice has receded to the woods. Jai finishes the spell in a daze, then looks up to see students gathered all around, watching him. He lifts the guitar and everyone cheers.
"Mr. Kapoor!"
Mrs. LaRue claps, and everyone falls silent.
"Brilliantly done!"
"Yeah, it was, wasn't it?" he grins.
"I will check for scratches," Rosa shouts, stepping out of the door. She snatches her guitar, then gives Jai a considering look.
"Not too terrible, Kapoor. Not too good, either. But not too terrible. Shame you skipped out on that rock class."
She stalks off, and Jai bows before his adoring new fans. I run to him and give him a high five.
"Did you see me, Amelia Jones? Was I not fantastic? Was I not on fire?"
"You were amazing, Jai."
"I know, I was."
He whoops. "Did you hear Rosa?"
"Not too terrible."
Miss Mott appears, the drum circle team running breathlessly behind her, and scoops Janet from my arms.
"Good girl, Janet. Oh, who's my best, most wonderful girl? Did Amelia keep you oh so safe? Did she, my Snooky Poo?"
"Is anyone going to ask what just happened?" asks Phoebe. "Where did that ice come from?" I swallow hard, feeling a murmur of unease in my gut.
"A very good question," Mrs. LaRue says, walking up.
Students part for her, and she looks around at us all with thinly veiled suspicion.
"A very good question indeed."
She arches an eyebrow at Phoebe. Phoebe waves her hands.
"Wasn't me. The ice sculpting club finished practice 2 hours ago."
"It must have been Sousa," says Trevor Thompson.
Mrs. LaRue arches her eyebrows.
"I beg your pardon?
Isn't it obvious? Sousa's messing with us again. They did this."
The headmaestro presses her lips together. "Hmm." I don't think she's convinced, but everyone else is.
"All right, team," shouts Colin Brunnings. "We gotta get revenge on these jerk faces. Who's with me? Who's got ideas?"
"You're not even on the trials team, Colin," Victoria points out.
"Nobody is getting revenge," says Mrs. LaRue sternly. "Nobody is doing anything except moving along to their next class. Leave this to your maestros. There is likely a very natural explanation."
But she doesn't seem to know what that explanation might be. She stares pensively at the lake and says no more. It isn't until later, when I go to my room to change my soaking clothes, that I find it. Resting on my pillow is a dead, shriveled rose atop a slim black card. My body goes cold. I run into the hallway and look up and down, but I'm the only person in sight. There isn't a doubt in my mind what the rose means or who left it there. Was he here in my room? Is he hiding on the campus? Or did he somehow put the rose there by magic? I pick up the card and find silver letters inked on it in beautiful, flowing handwriting. "You owe me a spell, Amelia Jones. The next consequence won't be so harmless." Shuddering, I grab the rose and rip it apart, then do the same with the card, throwing the pieces in my trash can. The icy spell was the work of the Necromuse, just as I'd feared. It was his first consequence. He's toying with me, letting me know he can reach me even at Mistwick, and that everyone around me is also at risk.
He wants me to see that he can do anything he wants, despite the protective forest around the school. And whatever's coming next, it will be worse.